This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. It is Sharp Money. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. Not just the big news of us with the $1,000 free roll, but breaking news, the 49ers are trading for Broncos defensive end Randy Gregory. So remember, Gregory, he wasn't officially released by the Broncos, so he's been traded to the 49ers. The rich get richer if they can do anything with that all-world talent. Remember, out of Nebraska, troubled, the 49ers, who are part of the mix as far as our $1,000 free voucher at 5.5 to 1 to win a Super Bowl, just traded for Randy Gregory. Okay, we got you back. We're going to welcome in our buddy, college football handicapper, Kyle Hunter. You can find Kyle on Twitter at Kyle Hunter Picks. And as we say hi to Kyle, we're going to dive into some games this weekend as far as college is concerned. And I'll start with this one just because it's a wild situation for Notre Dame. Their third big test in a row, they head to Louisville, and I'll give you 6. So Notre Dame's laying 6, and Kyle, we've got a total of 53.5.
Yeah, I mean, first, it's great to be here again, guys. Thanks for having me on. I think this is an interesting game where you've got Notre Dame with talent advantage, Louisville in a better spot, because Notre Dame's had several big games in a row, and then obviously they play USC coming up. So you could argue situationally that this is a really tough spot for Notre Dame. From my standpoint, I would say Louisville, not a good look for them on offense last week against NC State. NC State really not a very good defense. And Louisville was kind of humming on offense against Boston College, Georgia Tech, Murray State. But then against Indiana, decent defense, NC State, decent defense, they've kind of been a mess. Like, I don't think I can trust Louisville to score too many in a game like this. Plummer has made some really bad decisions in key moments. I don't trust him against a good defense that doesn't give up big plays. And that's kind of what Louisville is all about, is getting those explosive plays on offense. I don't think they can consistently move the ball down the field against a team like Notre Dame. On the other side, Louisville's defense has been pretty good. But as I said, if you look at their schedule they've played against, really, I think you can discount a lot of their stats, because Louisville's a decent team, and you know, Brohm's doing a good job. I think he'll do a good job at Louisville. But you know, their record, it makes them look better than what they really are. So Notre Dame, 54th strength of schedule, Louisville, 100th. Both these teams play relatively slowly. Notre Dame, 112th in tempo, and Louisville, 86th. I know it's not a great spot for Notre Dame. Big talent differential, though, and they get back a few of their top wide receivers. I don't trust Louisville's offense here. My leans are Notre Dame, and then I also like the under here. Totals are what I usually do the best at, and under is my favorite play in this one.
Okay, you can find a 54. Kyle, we're going to pull you down just for a second and try to reconnect. I don't want to miss a word you have to say, because that was a great breakdown. So again, if you miss Kyle Hunter's take on Notre Dame Louisville, he leans Notre Dame as far as the side. You can find a 6 in the market, and he leans the under Amal Shaw 54 as far as the total.
Yeah, I think this is a game. If you like the under, I think you're firmly in that camp. If you like the over because of Louisville's offense and Notre Dame's ability against not as strong of a defensive side from the Cardinals, in my estimation, this is an interesting one. I want to see how Hartman and Estime perform against his Louisville defense. On the flip side, Thrash and company have been outstanding. What can he do offensively on the perimeter against them? Plummer, how effective can he be now? A major step up in competition. Guys, we saw them really struggle Friday night in Raleigh in that spot against NC State. They eke out a 13-10 win. Really couldn't get much going. A little bit of just tough. I know NC State's got a pretty good defense, but I would argue that Notre Dame's got an even better defense. And this would be interesting to see who can kind of assert themselves in this football game.
Didn't it blow you away how effusive Brock Vereen was? He said it's the fastest team he's seen in person, that being Louisville when we had Brock on. Okay, I'm going to welcome back in Kyle, and Amal, I'll kick it over to you. Kyle Hunter, college football handicapper, back here on Sharp Money.
Yeah, let's go a little bit further down in Georgia. It's going to be Kentucky on the road between the hedges taking on Georgia. Kyle, when you look at this matchup, tell me where you see this one winding up. Georgia's had great success, dominated Kentucky last year. Now they're laying 14.5 and a total of 47.5 in this one.
Yeah, I think the question here is Georgia going to be that same team they've been the last couple of years? I mean, people kind of just assume it's going to happen. It hasn't happened yet this year. They've kind of leaned on Brock Bowers just being an amazing talent to kind of bail them out of a couple games. I think it's surprising that Georgia's defensive front has not done better than they have against the run. how's a team with this much talent giving up 3.97 yards per carry? We saw Thorne running on them really well last week, which is surprising. They really haven't even faced good rushing attacks so far this year. Now they do in Kentucky, who averages 6.48 yards per carry on the season. I don't think Georgia is actually bad against the run, but I think this is a good test for them. Davis, what a game last week from Kentucky. Fantastic stuff. I didn't expect that because Florida had been pretty good against the run before that. But, you know, I think Kentucky is a team that really relies on those big plays. They're first in explosiveness on offense in the country, 84th in success rate. So huge split. You see a team that does get stuffed behind the line a decent amount of times, but they do get a lot of big plays. So Georgia needs to stop those big plays. I think Georgia, to me, the play calling has not been great. Bobo comes back here. Pretty predictable play calling. In this case, I would have to lean Kentucky plus the points based on everything we've seen. Now, of course, it's not going to be shocking if at some point Georgia just flips the switch. And maybe it could be this game, but I think Kentucky plus 14.5 is the side I would have to take. Also kind of like the under in this game. I think the tempo for both teams will be pretty slow and we'll see a lot of running.
I'll never understand the obsession with Mr. Bobo. I totally agree with you there. Okay, let's keep it going. Arizona USC, you know you're going to have a big total here because Mr. Grinch's defense. Let's see, Kyle. We've got Arizona at USC here in Los Angeles. 21.5 is the number and 72 on the total.
Yeah, I think 21.5 is pretty key. We see several 21s, several 21.5. In a game like this, the back door should be pretty wide open. You know, is it going to be Jaden Delora, Noah Fafita? I don't know if that's the correct pronunciation or not, but does it really matter who's quarterback here? Because the backup did play well last week against Washington in a game where Arizona hung around against a really good team. To me, USC laying this many points, not bettable. Of course, they could win by 40 or 50 points. It wouldn't be totally shocking, but there's two issues. One, they've shown us time and time again that they'll get a big lead and then that Grinch defense will let teams back in the second half. Two, they play at Notre Dame next. Huge matchup. This isn't a spot where you'd expect USC to just run it up and show everything they have. I like Arizona here, but I also think this could be a good game to live bet because USC does get out to fast starts. So if you see USC take a 14-0 lead, 21-0 lead, I think grabbing Arizona plus a big number there on a live betting line would be a good play.
Kyle, I think that's an excellent point. You can get potentially over 4 touchdowns during this game, Patrick. It's a good one. Last year was 45-37 down in the desert. And Kyle brought up a few points, and you mentioned the same thing. With Alex Grinch's defense, we saw it against Arizona State. We saw it against Colorado. How many points are going to be comfortable enough to you, for somebody to lay with the Trojans in this game?
Yep. 100%. Let's keep it going. Kyle Hunter joining us here. Sharp Money, college football handicapper at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Next one up, Michigan at Minnesota. So I'll set you up on the number here. Of course, Michigan at Minnesota. Minnesota, that offense has been atrocious, as you know. Let's go 18, and I'll give you a 46 on the total.
All right, so I think the thing about this game that stands out is really Minnesota is not very good. Minnesota's been a good team the last few years. I don't think they're good anymore. They're 101st in yards per play margin on the season, negative 0.65 yards per play. Really bad, especially when you look at the schedule they've played, guys. Nebraska, Eastern Michigan, North Carolina, Northwestern, Louisiana. So we'll give them North Carolina, but other than that, there's really no good excuse to be that bad on the yards per play margin. I think they have some real problems. And Michigan, I mean, I'll say first, I'm an Ohio State fan. I'm happy to say that. And so I'm not rooting for Michigan in general, but you know, I can be honest about the approach and say that Michigan's a really good team. I think they were kind of disappointing people before last week. That didn't really make any sense to me that people were getting so low on them, though, because Michigan's fine. They got a great offensive line, really good defensive line. Harbaugh's a good coach. I think Minnesota's front seven on defense is way down from the last few years. Rossi's a good defensive coordinator, but they're just outmanned badly here. I think Corum and company will run over them, so I will take Michigan here minus the points.
Kyle, last week I made the comment that the winner of the Ohio State-Michigan game is going to win the national title. Are there other teams you'd throw in the mix? Because I think both these teams have elite defenses. How do you see these two teams as we go down the stretch in terms of potentially betting future odds to win a national title?
Well, I mean, I think the tricky thing about that is Penn State is so good. So, you know, where's Penn State come into this? There's three teams there in that same division. They're so good. I think Penn State's defense is excellent. And Penn State probably has a decent chance to at least win one of those two games against either Ohio State or Michigan. So it's tricky to forecast exactly who's going to be in the Big Ten title game from that division. For me, I would say the other team that has the same upside that I think could be super dangerous is Texas. You know, Texas has a great win against Alabama on the road. I know Alabama is not as good as they have been, but you go on the road and play against that good of a defense and pick up a win like that, I think your upside is super high.
Well, speaking of Texas, Red River, Cotton Bowl, I know you don't have a hardcore opinion here, but let me just set it up for you. You got about 45 seconds here, Kyle. Oklahoma, Texas. I got Texas laying 5.5 and 60.5 on the total.
Yeah, guys, this line has been all over the place this week. I think it's a pretty, you know, I love to watch the market, seeing this bounce all over the place. It's super interesting. Oklahoma's +8 turnover margin so far this year. It makes me a bit skeptical about them. The advanced numbers kind of suggest their offensive line is a relative weakness. It's a big test for them going up against a really good Texas defensive line. Texas 15th strength of schedule, according to Sagarin, Oklahoma 60th. I would have to lean toward Texas here. And I see some sharp people taking the under. I don't totally understand that one because we've seen a lot of shootouts here in this one. I think there will be points again.
Kyle Hunter, great job, Kyle. Enjoy the football this weekend. College football handicapper, also pro, and he loves college hoops as well. Go check him out at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Thank you, Kyle.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you. We'll get into the Red River rivalry next in the shootout. Brian Bosworth, speaking of which, is going to join us in 15 minutes as well. We also have to figure out this voucher, $1,000 free play for the boys.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Are you looking to become a better? Of course you are, and tens of thousands of people have already tuned into and turned to Juice Reel. That's Juice R-E-E-L in the App Store. Juice Reel is not a sports book. It's a tool to help you beat the books. Juice Reel connects all of your sports betting accounts into one app, loads all of your betting history, and gives you an analytical edge backed by nearly 1 billion in bets from sports bettors in all 50 states. You can use the data to follow the winners and fade the losers. Don't place another bet until you've downloaded this revolutionary sports betting tool, Juice Reel. That's juice like orange juice, Reel, R-E-E-L. It's absolutely free to download your iPhone, your Android. Become a better with Juice Reel. Catch you back here. Brian Bosworth, an Oklahoma legend, will join us. Red River Shootout coming up this weekend. Amal Shaw, of course, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. We it's a great Friday for us as we've got the $1,000 free roll from the contest amongst the shows here. We did not outsell everybody. I just want to make that clear, but we did win the random drawing. So thank you to Bill AD and the crew that's providing the $1,000. Going to be delivered on Monday. So we are trying to put together our futures play at the Rap Radio, VSIN Live on Twitter. You can go help us vote for who you think we should pick for our futures bet. Okay. What else? Brian Bosworth, I mentioned Samich on a Sunday. We're going to run the board coming up, boys. But just quickly, let's get into this. So the Cotton Bowl this weekend, looking forward to it. The Venables, who I know, Amal, you've been high on year two, just a stark turnaround. If you think about Oklahoma, first off, Gabriel wasn't healthy last year in the 49-0 beatdown. So he is healthy. It's a team that gave up defensively 30 points per last year. Venables is a great defensive mind. They're giving up 10 points per through five. So corrected that side of the ball. It's an explosive offense. You see the numbers. So Oklahoma, Texas, neutral, 5.5, 61 on the total. 3-12 matchup. Texas, your third ranked team in the country. Offensive line and Jonathan Brooks is where you start. Yours has been great, but they ran for 217 over Kansas. But Worthy and Mitchell. And then we were discussing where the defense ranks nationally. Maybe I oversold it a little bit, but this is the best defensive team, in my estimation, the Longhorns in the Big 12. Boys, let's jump into it. Well, I mentioned 5.5 and 61, Amal.
I'll tell you what, I've been to a lot of these games. I've never expected the first part of this conversation to start with defense, but these are two top 12 defenses. Patrick, you've been on this Texas defense all year long, and I don't think people are aware how good they've been defensively. They have not given up more than 20 points combined in any single quarter this year. It has just been a dominant performance. They've given up 64 points in five games. Think about that for a second, guys. If you're giving up less than 13 points a game, it's very hard to lose a football game when you got Ewers and Worthy on the other side of that offense along with Jatavion Sanders. But again, I want to go back to a point you made earlier. They had that one hiccup defensively, and I'm not going to call it a hiccup because you and I know what Jalen Milroe can do when you look at Burton and Bond on the perimeter for Alabama and Jace McClellan. They're a dangerous offense. They have stymied everyone they face. I get every team they haven't played is Alabama, but at the end of the day, when you're getting out there and you're making plays and you look at these numbers for this team defensively, what they've been able to do, it tells you why Texas is right there as one of the few teams that's in that race, not only to make the college football playoff, but to be a national champion. I mean, this season so far alone, they've had 44 more first downs than their opponent. Think about that for a second when you just average it out per game. That's almost 100 yards per game just simply based on that. Been dominant, controlling the line of scrimmage. They've done a great job so far this year. Teams that have gotten in the red zone, they've only had five scores in the red zone this year against Texas. I think this is one where you mentioned it. Dillon Gabriel didn't play last year. Oklahoma got worked 49-0. You talk about bulletin board material and ready to be focused. That's going to be the Sooners. But is this offense good enough against an elite Texas defense? On the flip side, when you look at this Oklahoma team, DeSean McCullough, Stutzman, these guys have been great. They got to get the consistency on the perimeter in the passing game. Drake Stoops is a great receiver. Dillon Gabriel is going to have to target him. He's going to have to be savvy about when he runs the football because they've got an absolute beast back there in Marcus Majors. If they're not smart about this, guys, it could be a little bit of a problem. I didn't make a play in this game, but I'm going to tell you, I hate to do this because I always cheer against the burnt orange in this one. I think Texas wins and covers.
Great breakdown. If you like Oklahoma to cover, I'll just put it that way. First off, you know, 8 of the last 10 matchups between these two teams, big guy, were decided by one score. Also, you take a look at Oklahoma this year, 5-0 ATS. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 teams, Penn State, Oklahoma, Oregon, and UNLV, all 5-0 ATS this year. Amal had a great breakdown. Let's hear yours.
Betting splits, just a quick update over VSiN.com. You can see all the betting splits, 80% of the handle on 79% of the bets on the Longhorns, laying the 5.5. This was a game I went into really wanting to find a bet on Oklahoma, and I got to tell you guys, I couldn't get there. I think Oklahoma is much improved. I think that defense takes a major step forward so far this year with like 20 transfers being brought in, a lot of them on that side of the ball. Venables getting to install his system even more, but they have not been tested at all. I watched a lot of the game against Cincinnati. They really struggled to pull away, and they ended up pushing that game. I believe it was a 14-point line at the end, and they just didn't have enough firepower to put a team like Cincinnati away playing its first season in the Big 12 that left me hesitant to want to back them. I'm surprised the number got to where it is at 5.5 right now, because everything to me says you go with Texas here. Look, I get that Quinn Ewers is the guy who's the sexy name for everyone when they look at Texas. I know he used to have a mullet. I don't think he does anymore. And I know he's going to be a first-round pick as a quarterback. And this guy's probably flying under the radar simply because he's replacing a guy who was such a stud a year ago. I think Jonathan Brooks is a monster, and I think he's a guy they're going to feed a lot this weekend, and he could end up having a great day against this Oklahoma defense. They haven't seen a running back who looks like him so far this year, and that's why I also think the under might be a play I end up adding. I just think 61 is a lot of points for an improved Oklahoma defense and what is an awesome Texas defense. I lean under in this one.
Big guy, I'm right there with you. However, I think it's going to be nervy early. Under 30.5 in the first half.
That's where we're nervy early
between these two, feeling each other out. Like also, that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the Alabama win and the other close game for Texas, wasn't it Wyoming?
Wyoming, yeah.
First half. They kind of pulled the big shots in the fourth quarter, yeah. Pulled away. They're super talented. I think it's going to be a feel-out process first half. Nervy early. Give me under 30 and a half.
I'm with you on that one.
I like the call there. And I'll tell you another thing. You're absolutely right. These games have been historically. Remember the Caleb Williams game a couple years ago. We see Oklahoma with the Avalanche in the second half. It seems like a lot of the scoring in this series, comes later in the game so many times. I'll tell you, the only reason I'm not going to go with the under in this game, on paper, it should be an underplay all day. I've seen too many of these games just turn into track meets out there at the State Fair. It's the weather's always amazing. It's mid-70s. It's the day the Chamber of Commerce asked for. And this is going to be a fun one. I don't think we're going to have a repeat of last year's 49-0 game. But I think Patrick's point he made a few weeks ago about Texas has not changed. This, for me, is one of the top five defenses in college football. Everybody wants to point to Brooks and to Ewers and to Worthy and Sanders on the offensive side. But, guys, this defense, they have not allowed more than 24 points against any opponent, including Alabama, on the road. You've got to keep an eye on this Texas defense if you're Oklahoma and you're going to be effective. You've got to be able to control the clock, control the ball. If you can't do that, there's some quick three and outs. Bye-bye, Oklahoma.
Yeah. And I think trenches-wise, I think Texas does have the edge. Are we going to have to eventually are the three of us going to have to eventually apologize to Steve Sarkisian?
No,
that would not be a good day.
No, because let's look at the Texas schedule. At what point does Steve Sarkisian stand in the way of this team making the postseason?
The first Saturday in October, the first Saturday in December in Arlington at Jerry World.
Yes.
When they play Oklahoma in the rematch and the Sooners win.
There will be a moment where Steve Sarkisian thinks, you know what? I've overcome it all, guys. I'm finally legit. I've put Nick Saban in the rear view. Everyone's looking at me as like, I am a good coach. And at some point he will stub his toe, shoot them in the foot, and Texas season will go up in flames.
I got to tell
probably
you,
right.
I just real quick to Patrick's point on this defense. I didn't see it with them, Patrick, what you mentioned earlier in the year. I went back and looked at the numbers. These dudes are dominant.
They're big.
They're just good, right? Like when you look at the numbers statistically, when you're giving up less than 13 points a game, I don't care if you're playing the Wyomings of the world. Look, Wyoming took care of business against Texas Tech, and I promise you when the Red Raiders play the Horns, that'll be a tougher game than Texas wants. You called it early on, and there's nothing that has changed with this team from a defensive standpoint. Look at what they did against Kansas. Jason Bean fumbles the football. They get a scoop and score the rest of the way. I mean, they have really been thorough in their domination of their opponent so far, minus the Wyoming game.
And they're rotating a lot of guys on that D-line. That D-line's causing a lot of problems for a lot of people. Murphy, Burke, Sweat. They've got like six or seven guys that are rotating on the D-line. So those guys are staying fresh throughout the game as well.
And back to what you said about Alabama. I mean, they kind of embarrassed Alabama in Tuscaloosa. So that was, embarrasses a stretch.
Oh,
but it was the better team from start to finish in that matchup.
That final score was not as close as that game. That game was much more dominant by Texas.
And it was a 10-point win.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yep, yeah, absolutely.
24. All right. We've got an Oklahoma legend joining us next, boys. That is Brian Bosworth, the Boz. I don't even know if kids of this generation know growing up how much swag Brian Bosworth had. Could you imagine him with Instagram and TikTok? He'd be owning it. Bosworth joins us next year on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Sharp Money, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. Red River, of course, the showdown coming up tomorrow. We'll get to that with Brian Bosworth, an Oklahoma legend. But quickly, want to let you know, yesterday we dropped the 2023 NBA betting guide. 30 team previews, live betting strategies, futures, and year-long player props. Also building a model for the season, Jonathan Von Tobel. Subscribe for as low as $19 right now. vsin.com/subscribe. So if you're talking Oklahoma, Texas, I'm not sure we can do better than this right here. Brian Bosworth, the Boz man. You can find him on Cameo, and people don't realize in a social media age, this guy had more swag than anybody on the planet and still does. Cameo.com/Brian Bosworth. Make sure you go get a Cameo from the Boz. Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for the Cameo plug, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man, you're the best. Cameo.com/Brian Bosworth.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. They have a great program.
What does it mean to you? We were just talking about the Cotton Bowl. We were talking, maybe you think Michigan, Ohio State, Iron Bowl nationally. Why don't you frame it for us? What does Oklahoma, Texas mean to the Boz?
Well, Look, I don't know what other rivalry games feel like because, you know, I'm not I don't have an emotional tie to Ohio State and Michigan or Florida and Georgia or, you know, any of these others. But there is no rival to the OU Texas game. You can't describe it unless there is some emotional connection to the game. For me, you know, born in Oklahoma, kidnapped, raised in Texas, forced to listen to that stupid Eyes of Texas song while I was in high school. But made a promise when I was like 9, 10 years old to my grandfather, who was a farmer up in Oklahoma, who could never leave the farm to come watch me play sports as a kid. But he did say, hey, look, there's a little school that's down the street. If you're good enough and you get a chance to play for them, I'll leave the farm because that's like 30, 45 minutes away. I can get away on a Saturday and come watch you play. And again, I'm 9, 10 years old. And I'm going, okay, that sounds good. I promise you I'll do everything I can in my power to get to that little school. Go home, go to the house and ask my grandmother, what's the little school that's down the street? Your granddad will come watch me play. And he goes, you mean the University of Oklahoma? That's it. I got to go there. So that's where the seed was planted. And then I became, you know, in love with them because in 74, 75, they won national champions back to back. But it was more than the success on the field. It was the way in which their success came. And then the charisma of their head coach, Barry Switzer. And, you know, back in those days, games weren't accessible. So the only access I really had to Oklahoma football was the Barry Switzer show. And, you know, it motivated me to not only keep my promise, but knowing that that's really where my home is. That's where my heart is. And I want to go and play for that school, but I want to impact the school. I just want to be a guy on the sideline. So it was a motivating factor for me to get there because the way the University of Texas was then and kind of still are, they always, I mean, we kind of look at them as, you know, these entitled, you know, know-it-all, you know, prima donna, just kind of spoiled snobs. You know, and in reverse, they look at the University of Texas, the University of Oklahoma as a bunch of backward country rednecks that really don't have, you know, any worth of acknowledgement because we're just farm boys. And I get that. That's just part of the, you know, the way they think and, you know, the way we believe. But, you know, in the 70s and the 80s, the way we played, the epitome of football was to be physical at the point of attack and suffocate and destroy your enemy. And that's why the Oklahoma-Nebraska game was so pivotal at the end of the season. But there were two games on the calendar that really mattered to the alumni and the coaching staff and the players. And, of course, the Nebraska game meant a lot because it really determined who won the Big Eight. But the bragging rights for 365 days of the year was that game in the Cotton Bowl. And it doesn't matter who's the best team, because the best team sometimes walks out of that stadium shocked because they figure out, I don't know how we lost that game. And that's the one thing about rivalry games, anything can happen. And the one thing that you never measure is the size of a man's heart with a chip on his shoulder and a prize in the horizon, knowing that if he's passionate enough, the only thing that matters is that Saturday in October that sets the stage for the remainder of your season. And it really is kind of that pivotal game that everybody looks at, win or lose, as to the way they play the following game and then on down the line. Because there's so much emotion, there's so much on the line for both states, pride, passion, manhood, all of it. And I'm sure all the other, you know, rivalry games have the same thing, but I'm going to tell you something. When you're standing in the Cotton Bowl and you have half the stadium orange and the other half of the stadium crimson, it's not only deafening, it's intimidating. It can overwhelm your emotions. So the trick is to get in there and just put the blinders on and block out all the noise and just remind yourself it's a football game. I hate these guys. If something bad happens, I got to let it go quickly so the wheels don't fall off the bus and we can recover, because that game really does come down to the team that makes the fewest mistakes usually wins the game. Usually. Unless the referees are involved, and you go back and watch the 84 game and watch that fiasco, because we clearly won that game.
Was that the tie?
Not only they knew it, that's the tie, dish, whatever you want to call it. You know, interception in the end zone by Keith Stansbury, fumble recovery in the middle of the field by Paul Maniago, a field goal that was clearly so far out of, out of the goalpost that, I was looking for zebra season to be open that night or that day, because I had two stallions that were going to be mounted on my wall. That's just the name of that game. And I don't know what really happened, but it was a travesty. We recovered. But I think the most important thing, we knew it and the whole world knew who won that game and who dominated that game. And we did that for the next couple of years. And that's the way this series goes. So hopefully this year, we turn the tides. Last year was an abomination, 49-0. But, forget the score. We were playing, like a bird with clipped wings. We couldn't get off the ground because, our quarterback was hurt in the TCU game. And it was Brent Venables' first year. So, a lot of different factors go into this game. But you can tell I can go on and on about it. It's the most important game in the world to me.
I understandably so. Patrick, for a lot of people that don't know, University of Oklahoma's largest alumni base is in the city of Dallas. This is, in my opinion, I'm from Ohio. Patrick's from Michigan. I said this is still the best rivalry in college football. Boz, there's a million questions I can ask you, but I got to ask you, you had a great recruiting story from Barry Switzer when he came to MacArthur High School in Irving. We got a couple of minutes if you can just keep it brief on that story, but I love the story you told about it.
Well, when I was recruited, I didn't have a whole lot of confidence in myself in high school, mainly because my head coach, downplayed my worth as a football player. He just said, "Hey, man, you might be good enough to play Division II football," even though I was getting letters in my mailbox from just about every school in the country. But a letter's a letter, So until you get asked, go, "Hey, man, these guys really want me." So when I went to SMU, I committed to them. When I went to Baylor, I committed to them. When I went to LSU, I committed to them. When I went to Texas A&M, I committed to them. And I finally got to the point where I better stick to one of these commitments. That Oklahoma was my last recruiting trip. And my concern was, when I looked at the roster, I go, "I don't know if I want to go play, and I might get a scholarship, but I don't want to stand on the sideline and watch 4 years go by. I want to impact the field." So my confidence level wasn't where it wanted to be. So I called the coach, called the recruiting coordinator there, Scotty Hill, and said, "I'm going to cancel my trip. I'm going to A&M, and then Coach Switzer shows up in my cafeteria in my high school the very next day in a mink coat, wearing all of his bling bling, screaming across the cafeteria, "Where's Boz? Where's Boz? You want one of these? If you come to University of Oklahoma, you get hardware." And I'm going, "Oh my God, this ain't happening to me right now." So that kind of set the tone, but really what put the nail in the coffin was, he just said, "Hey, just give us a chance. Come look at us. Come see what we have to offer." Brought me into his office, and he goes, and I asked him point blank, "You can have any linebacker in the country. Why do you want me so bad? Our high school team was 2-8. And he goes, "I don't care about your record. I just see the athlete, and I see something in you that is far beyond what you think you're capable of. But if you come here, I'll pull it out of you. I believe in you. I just want you to come home." And when he said that, I knew where my address was going to be for the next 4 years.
Cameo.com/Brian Bosworth, the freaking legend that is the Boz.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5 and can pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use the promo code SHARP when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. So that was a legendary question by me because it then entered into, I think it was a 10-minute answer by Brian Bosworth. Now, a couple of things, Tom, I'm just playing. He's a legend. We just had Brian Bosworth on the show. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. I actually wrote down a quote from him during his answer. He said at one point, talking about the rivalry and just football in general, he said, football and Oklahoma football is about being physical at the point of attack. We wanted to suffocate and destroy the enemy. Think things have changed a little bit, boys?
Just a bit.
And then he finishes with a snap into a Slim Jim. Oh, yeah.
I mean, just that is like... We have, and we, it's obviously not political. It's just things have changed in life so much where they used to, quote, want to suffocate and destroy the enemy. I had to write that down.
Well, I mean, let's say he had 100 tackles in a season. How many of his tackles during his prime would have gotten called for targeting in today's rules?
Oh, my God. I mean,
he was clotheslining people. Dude, he was not good. He was now the injuries obviously with the Seahawks and all, yeah. But he was one of the great college football players of all time. It's not even a question.
Sports Illustrated at the end of the 99 football season did a top 100 players of all time. At that time, Brian Bosworth ranked 30th, only player to win two Butkus Awards, two-time All-American and linebacker, won a national championship with the Sooners. I mean, this guy was absolutely dominant in terms of what he did for Oklahoma. And you guys mentioned it. By the way, real quick, and you can look at this during the commercial. If you want to see what the difference in college football today is and college football in the past, there's a hit from Zach Dumas against Auburn in a bowl game. Don Cricky goes, that's the hit of the 89-90 bowl season. I mean, he just killed the guy. Today, your family would be suspended for the hit.
It's like, when he started, it started as something cliche. We wanted to be physical at the point of attack. Yeah. And then he paused. I thought the phone went out and he said, we wanted to suffocate and destroy the enemy. So, okay. That went from zero to Bosworth in like 2.2 seconds.
to now guys text each other after the game.
Yeah, exactly.
That is. When was Mandarich the year after or a couple of years after? Remember Michigan State cover of SI, Tony Mandarich?
That was a little bit after Boz.
Yeah, it's a little bit after Boz, but they're just guys that were just kind of low-key legends without social media, you know, the lure kind of built. Okay, let's get to some college football games. It's a big weekend. We've got our buddy Samich coming up. Samich got a brand new article over at VSiN.com, which we'll get to. But Amal, we'll start with you, and I do think there is a question. Now, this is testing Deion. There wasn't going to be a test. Colorado State at home. There wasn't going to be a test as far as motivation going to Eugene and taking on the Ducks. But how about going to Arizona State? It's 4 and the total 60.
Look, I know it's kind of a square play to take Colorado in this spot. We've got a short number here on a team that's 3-2 against an opponent that's 1-4. Guys, when you look at Arizona State, it's been inconsistency in terms of who's playing under center for them. They've had injuries. They had a variety of guys in there. They played competitively against Cal, but I still think that Colorado is an upgrade over California in terms of the quarterback position. Cal only threw for 130 yards last week. You got Bourgeois in under center here, had a fantastic game against the Golden Bears. They weren't effective on the ground. And if you're one-dimensional against a Colorado team who, even though they're not great defensively, I think their offense is going to put so much pressure on ASU, Patrick. I like Colorado here on the road. I would lay it up to 4. There were some threes out there earlier, now 3.5. Might be pressing for some spots. I like this game. 6:30 Eastern, 3:30 in the afternoon. Not going to be as hot in Tempe because we're in October. I don't think the weather will be as much of a factor here. I like the Buffaloes here. Just a more complete football team than ASU.
Totally agree. And what I meant by a challenge for Deion, obviously getting a team up after all those marquee games where they, again, had crazy numbers on television. They're going to a very bad Arizona State team. You look at the total of them all, Dustin, and you think, well, is this one we go over? Of course, Colorado's going to score at will. Arizona State has yet to score more than 28 this year. This is not a very good Colorado defense. We could start looking at the 58. I'd lean right now. I see 3.5. I don't think that number's in the market. It's mostly 4s. You can find a 3.5 with Colorado. I agree with them all here, Dustin.
I'm actually going to go on a prop on this one with Colorado. I like Dylan Edwards, the running back. Look, he's a freshman, and he's gotten more acclimated into the offense every single week. The only week you really didn't have a great week was Oregon, and nobody for Colorado had a great week that week, and you kind of ignore the running back when you're trailing by that many touchdowns early. You look through his season so far, 6 for 24 in the opener against TCU, was worked into the passing game, though, and had 135 receiving yards. Against Nebraska, went 9 for 55, 10 for 57 against Colorado State, and then 12 for 44 a week ago against USC. His rush prop total is set at 38.5. Arizona State, 62nd against the run. That's not awful, but it's not good either. Against Power 5 opponents this year, the Sun Devils allowed 113 rush yards to OK State, 213 to USC, and 196 on the ground at Cal. I think this is a game where Dylan Edwards could go over that low total of 38.5. He's averaging 5 yards a carry so far this year, so I'm going to take him here.
Good one, big guy. Kenny Dillingham, by the way, looks younger than any head coach in the history of college football. Fair?
Looks like
the
Zach Wilson. I think he's like 32. He's really
young. Looks younger than he just still has a baby face. It's
33.
Crazy.
Okay. 33. Yeah.
Though. Okay. Let's go. I know you have a play on the total here. Alabama, Texas A&M College Station this weekend. 46 is the number. Alabama. It's right. It's a pick'em. You can find a shop show in Alabama lane one. You can find pick'ems all over. Let's go with the total here.
Yeah, I like this game under 45.5, 46, depending on where you get the number. Even if it's 45, Patrick, I would still play it. I don't know what your guys' perception of the Ohio State-Notre Dame game was, 17-14, low scoring. I still think if you're a casual fan, it's a great football game because it was competitive. And that's exactly what I feel this game is going to be. One possession game, 20-17, 21-17, in that type of neighborhood. Both teams with tremendous kickers. Will Reichard for Alabama, and you look at Bond for Texas A&M. I think it's going to come down to one of these two guys who within 52 yards is within range, minimize the turnovers. Max Johnson takes over for Connor Wegman at the quarterback position. I don't believe in this guy. Now, I think that's going to be a little bit of a problem here for A&M. I don't think their running game is what it used to be. I think that's going to be a challenge, even though Johnson has played very, very well. Maybe I'm completely wrong, and he's turned a corner, and he's got just an absolute redemption story for this year for A&M. But guys, I think at the end of the day, with Jalen Milroe in this team, a little bit more complete, the running game with Jace McClellan, and these are both top 20 defenses. I think Bama's secondary is better. I think it makes a few more plays. That's the difference. I think they eke out a win. But at the end of the day, this is an underplay all day, low scoring, competitive, should be a fun game to watch if you're not rooting for anybody and you want to see a close football game.
Yeah, I'd go under or nothing here as well. Big guy, you got anything? I don't trust Max Johnson. Yeah,
so just some notes when I was researching this game on these defenses. A&M's defense, top 20 in EPA and top 10 in success rate. They give up their 33rd best in points allowed, 5th in yards allowed, 9th versus the pass, 21st versus the run, 2nd in sacks for this defense, and they're 3rd on 3rd down in the nation. On the other side, Alabama's defense is awesome. They're 5th in sacks, 4th in interceptions, and they're 25th on 3rd down. 75% of red zone trips, they stop teams from scoring. They're 28th there. They're really, really good. I think the under makes sense. I think I'm actually going to end up going with a first half play, though, on Texas A&M. Alabama's lost the first half in 3 of their last 4 road conference games. A&M has won 5 in a row at Kyle Field, and they've won the first half in their last 4 conference games at Kyle Field. So I think I'm going to go first half A&M.
Patrick, the reason why I like his first half play here is the only thing that Alabama's played that's comparable from a noise standpoint, and Milroe wasn't playing under center, was last year when they played on Rocky Top and they played at LSU. It will be so loud, it's deafening at Kyle Field. The noise retains in that stadium.
The only thing that beautiful. I think hurts the first half play would be is that it isn't a later kickoff, so yeah, the crowd isn't lubricated enough.
Oh, don't worry. They get their drink on early in College Station.
Congratulations, Dustin Sweetelson said the word lubricated and literally meant it. That was it. He just meant it as a term to use strategically on a television show. I can't believe that just happened. I've known you for too long for that to happen. Okay. Do you guys feel like Loxley and Maryland, do you think they may feel disrespected, undefeated, not ranked?
Yes.
But they head to Ohio State. Ohio State down to 19.5 of them all. Some shop showing 20 and 57 on the total. I know you two both have a play, so 30 seconds apiece.
Yeah, to me, real quick, I actually don't have a play on this one, but I would lean towards Maryland in the points or look at the over. Guys, both offenses can move the football. I think it's going to be tough for the Terps to slow down the Buckeyes a ton.
Yeah, this is similar to when I had Kansas in the first half against Texas. I think Maryland can hang around for a half with that offense. It's good enough right now the way they're humming. I think they hang for a half, but in the end, that Ohio State defense could end up getting them and losing the cover. So I'm going to go Maryland plus 10.5 in the first half.
Talia's actually balling.
Oh, yeah.
Now, they played nobody, but he looks good.
No, they've only beaten mid teams, yeah. But he's actually balling. It looks pretty good. Great job, boys. When we return, Mr. Packer, Mike Somich is going to join us. I can't stop. And we're going to run the board, of course, with Somich next here, Sharp Money.